Born at Sea, raised on radio, and currently still taking up residence in Minneapolis. We are out of the main. I am one of your co-hosts, Tom.
And I am your local Prince expert, John. Oh,
are you?
No.
You're the Prince kidding. Expert?
Oh. No. Okay. I know more than you do. In this room, I'm the expert.
That's true of most things, actually. I will say, however, that I regard Prince, the artist, as the most talented artist in the history of modern music, and it's not even close.
And I fully agree.
And if you're trying to think of who you might put in that category, the only thing I want to say about Prince, this person has to compose his own music.
Yes.
This person you're thinking of also has to be an accomplished vocalist with a huge range.
Yes.
Has to be not only a multi-instrumentalist, has to be expert at drums, expert at bass, expert at the keyboards and piano, and one of the best guitar players that ever walked the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Your person also has to dance as well as James Brown, and maybe better.
Yep.
Don't have to be a great actor, but you at least have to act.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to understand production, music technology.
Yes, because he did produce and record his own stuff early on. Yep.
And just play an absolute live show. And if that guitarist, by the way, also has to have one part Nile Rodgers, one part Jimi Hendrix, one part Steve Lukather, and one part, I don't know who else, Dean Parks.
Dean Parks, okay, yeah.
Is there anyone that is even in his stratosphere, in your mind?
No, there isn't. There may be people that you could argue historically were more important, because everybody, anytime you have this question, immediately somebody is going to yell Elvis or they're going to yell the Beatles at you because of their historical significance. But framed the way you framed it, no way.
Yeah.
Nobody.
No, exactly.
If there is, somebody could tell us, and we'll read your submissions online in a few years.
Yeah. I just, you know, Prince is one of those artists that I try not to listen to too much, because I know we're out of material and I don't want to completely exhaust it. And all of my favorite stuff, just about all of it, is in this time period that we're going to cover today in a format that you conceived of. And why don't you explain to the listening audience, and even those who aren't listening, what's going on?
Okay. I want to touch one thing. There are some negatives to Prince too, though. There are times that his experimental nature goes awry, or his desire to put anything he can dream of, press that into wax. Or sometimes, lyrically and idea-wise, he's, you know...
I'll agree with that.
You know, but...
Okay. I think we're going to touch on some of that today.
Because okay, so the idea of this was, we want to look at, from 79 to 89, we're giving his first album a pass. There is some good stuff on that. I just listened to that. Soft and Wet probably belongs in this conversation, and maybe that's a transition song for him. But... it's almost like, you know, in football, or some call it soccer, where they play international friendlies, right? Or it's a preseason game. We're going to call that album sort of his preseason. We're going to allow him to formulate who he is. And by the second album, we're starting to see it gel. So we're going to pick up there. And coincidentally, we both felt that his really most robust period of creativity ended at the Batman album, which was 1989. So 79 to 89. Now, that isn't to say there weren't some great things that happened afterwards.
Oh, correct.
You know, there. Yeah. I know people are really big into songs like Seven or The Most Beautiful Girl in the World. There's some great albums after that. There's no question. But
and there are some albums with great moments. And there's some stuff that you've never heard that I put on a Spotify playlist called The Lost Prince that happened after we all stopped paying attention, most of us, that is just brilliant.
Yeah,
that I had to rediscover. So, yes.
But there was a change in approach at that point, because then he started working with the New Power Generation, so it took on more of a live band feel. It was less of him conceiving of all the parts, and he became more of a band leader. So the sound was different. He had some albums in that period that just felt flatter than a pancake. You know, the Come album from 1994. Wah, wah. But then he came back with the Gold Experience in 1995, which was absolutely brilliant. Had it not had some, like, fluff in it that didn't need to be there, he had a couple of songs in there that's like, why is this on this record? You take those out, you mute those, that album's as good as anything from this period. But that's not the period we're talking about. This podcast is more focused on 70s to 80s, so we're going to stick in that time frame.
Absolutely. What we've got, 10 records.
10 records, and you have 100 points to work with. You can assign as many points as you want to each record, but it must, at the end, add up to a total of 100 points. You cannot exceed 100, but you must reach 100.
But this math, I had to go back a lot of times to recheck. Oh, my God. How do you add the same 10 numbers up and get 92 one time and 104 the next time?
You missed a 12 along the way. Yeah, apparently. Or a pair of sixes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then we go, like, we're going to cover the albums in their chronological order, and then we're going to say, of my 100 marbles, I am giving this album.
Marbles. Right? I like it.
I'll give this album 20 marbles. So okay. Now you're left with 80 for the next 9 albums.
I get that.
Yep.
I do.
Okay.
Shall we begin?
Yes, Lisa. Well, is the water warm enough?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so what I thought might be interesting to do, Maestro,
yep.
is we're going to cover these chronologically. And I, when I went back and listened to all these albums, I was struck by how each of the albums opened up sonically. And each one set the tone, like, right off the bat
Ooh.
For what the sound of the album's going to be.
Indeed.
So as we do each of these albums, if you don't mind just playing the first, I don't know, few measures of every one of these albums, and we're going to listen to how the sonic palette evolves over the
years. Works for me.
All right. So the first album, as you mentioned, that we're going to talk about is 1979's Prince.
The biggest hit off of this would be probably Why You Want to Treat Me So Bad and I Want to Be Your Lover. Those would be the two. It opens with which?
I Want to Be Your Lover.
Let's hit it.
What I love sonically about this album, by the way, is we're pre-synth. It's close. It gives me the same like vibe as Yacht Rock, even though I don't think it sounds like Yacht Rock.
Yeah, it's got that pristine where you can hear every little instrument. It's simple in its concept, in its structure. It's not layered with a bunch of stuff. You can clearly hear what every little bit is doing, and it's right there in front of you.
Absolutely. You mentioned some of the hits. I Feel For You was, I think, popularized by Chaka Khan, but that's also on this album.
Yep.
But sonically, I just love the way. Now he's producing.
Yes,
he's doing all the writings. We
to my understanding, about. He's probably doing a lot of the recording. It's not necessarily always credited that way, but I got the impression that he was given. First of all, he was the youngest artist that Warner ever gave full creative control on record to for the first two records when they gave him a 2-record deal. I think it was. So this would have been one of those, and I just kind of pictured him alone in the studio somewhere. You know, he's playing all the parts. So that means he's laying down the drums. Did he have a rudimentary drum machine that set the click, or did he just go and sit behind the drum kit and lay that down and start adding on top of that? I don't know what his process was.
It's awfully locked in.
Yeah.
But you do get a chance to appreciate Prince, the instrumentalist, in this because there's nothing hiding anything. So
right.
I just love this album. Anything else you want to say about it before we start awarding points?
No,
maybe just some other tracks. In case With You is on here, Sexy Dancer.
Bambi is a one that people like a lot. That's kind of a hard rock tune. It's a little thin production, this album, to really pull off a hard rock tune. But once you settle in on that song and you get to the end for the guitar solo, whoo, pure fire.
Well, as long as we're doing that, just play. You brought this up in the Yacht Rock contest context, because you thought it sounded like he was channeling Jay Graydon. The ending solo in Why You Want to Treat Me So Bad.
I thought he was channeling Lukather, I think. I may have said. You think I said Graydon? But
it sounds to me more like Graydon.
Yeah, the point's valid either way.
Well, it ends with Wire Choir before the fade.
True,
so.
True. Yeah.
All right. So I reminded myself how much I love this album.
Me too. How many did you give it?
I gave it 10 points.
Okay. I gave it 9.
Ooh, okay. It's going to be close already.
Yeah.
1 point differential. All right. Great album, though.
Yep.
The next album, again, we'll play a little of the opening track, and now we're talking about the album Dirty Mind, 1980, which opens up with the song Dirty Mind.
And immediately you can hear the same sonic texture as the first Time album. Clearly the two were made at the same time. I don't know what the dates are, but at least in Prince's mind, that was the sonic picture he had.
It's obviously there's going to be some more synthetic nature to this album, right when I hear it.
Yeah.
Than the previous album. But it does. It sounds like, yeah.
Still pre-drum machine and pre-sequencer, so everything's being played.
Played, yeah.
Supposedly, as an aside, Prince never liked to use a sequencer for any keyboard parts. He would play everything. So all right. A lot of these bass lines that are moving, you know, he's playing those top to bottom. It's not programmed into a sequencer and then hit space bar. So.
Huh. We're going to have to come back to that mm-hmm. thought. Did that happen, as far as you know, through, say, 1999? I'm sorry, Purple Rain?
Yes.
Okay.
Then at least beyond that.
Yep. All right. Okay. So what would you say the hits? We got When You Were Mine was a hit off here. Head is a song that's very familiar to me. I doubt that was a radio hit.
Yeah, you got to remember that we grew up in, I don't know if you listened as much as I did to the, I've talked about him on this show before, the Electrifying Mojo that did the nighttime show on the local funk station, WJLB.
In Detroit?
Yeah, and he played so much Prince, and he was such a great DJ, but he would play anything. And this was that era, almost like the rock era, where you could play any song off of any of these albums in a nighttime radio show, and people would appreciate it. Uptown kind of got a fair amount of airplay. Party Up. But
Party Up.
When You Were Mine would be the most recognizable song, because that was, as you mentioned last week, was cut by Mitch Ryder.
Right. Yep. What a time to be alive, though, when the actual disc jockey was not only selecting the songs, but actually physically playing them. Mm-hmm. Now it's all just, I mean, why are there even humans on radio stations anymore? They don't do anything.
Yeah, I know. Their amount of time actually on air doing something can't add up to more than 4 minutes per hour.
We wonder why the radio business is hurting.
Yeah.
Okay. So, different sonically for me. I felt like this...
You have to sink into it and get used to the sound.
Yes.
Immediately, it's like you're listening to sponges, it feels like.
Yes, you know? Especially coming off the last record.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do this chronologically, like back to back to back, you're like, whoa, this took a left turn.
Musically, I find it very interesting. There's a couple places that it goes off the rails, but musically, overall, I find it pretty interesting.
Yep, I agree with
that.
How
many points
well,
do you want me to go first?
I find it... You go first.
This one I gave 6, but I... there's a couple times I have to subtract points for the cover, and this is one where I think I subtracted 2 points for the cover. But yeah, 6 points.
Okay. My memory would have told me that I liked this record better than I actually did on a re-listen.
Okay.
Similar score there. I gave it 4 points.
Okay.
So Dirty Mind, 4 for me.
Okay.
And 6 for you, correct?
That's
keeping
right.
Score at home, literally.
So this moves us into 1981, and what we're going to notice as we go along, that he does an album a year, every year, except for the year that he was also making the movie Purple Rain, which he gave himself a little extra time.
Right.
But so here we are, 1981, Controversy.
Hearing any synths there?
Yeah.
The very first note.
It's funny. Whack! It's similar to the beginning of Dirty Mind in the way it starts. Now that you point that out. But sonically better to me.
That's what I thought about this album. I thought he leaps and bounds. Just it has a better sonic palette to it.
Now, this was the first album that was ever introduced to me by Prince. And it was by a friend of a friend in high school that was had discovered him years before. And... was constantly playing them in his car. Always had the Prince Controversy cassette going. And I grew up in a bubble of influences where I never would have heard anything like this. All my friends were all rockers, you know? Mm-hmm. So hearing anything like this was so foreign to me. And when I first heard it and I saw the cover again and the name Prince, and this just seemed so weird to me that I didn't want to like it, and yet the more he played it, the more I'm like, dang, this is really interesting. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit what I thought my sound palette was at the time, but I couldn't help but love it, and it just grew on me because I think there are songs on here that are really accessible musically, but it's also highly creative. It does a lot of really interesting things, goes into a lot of different places.
I think this is where Prince takes a turn for the exceptional. I think leading up to this, he had 2 good records. And then this is, you and I often talk, not even on the podcast, but offline, about artists having these three record runs that are just like boom, 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 that far and away. And it's hard for an artist with the size of a catalog that Prince does to say there was a three record run. To me, I think this starts the three.
This is album one of the three record run for me too. Yes.
So controversy then, because you were playing this, you played it at home.
Yeah.
And I, so this is my introduction to Prince as well. And then I think you went and bought the earlier Prince record, self-titled,
yes, and then correct,
that came into the household. But this is my sort of portal into Prince. Tracks that I just, these all sound like hits to me. I don't know if they will to other listeners, but Controversy, which we mentioned, Sexuality,
yeah,
Do Me Baby,
yeah,
Private Joy,
all of them,
Let's Work, Jack You Off,
yeah. Did you say that?
That's actually a song title too.
Yeah, even the Ronnie Talk to Russia is so strange, but so interesting.
Very strange, but interesting. I agree. And then the only song we didn't mention was Annie Christian.
Oh man. Once you get far enough into listening to Prince that you've moved beyond the hits and you start hearing some of these deep cuts like Annie Christian, you realize how brilliant that song is. Listen to the sonic thing going on in that tune. Everything about that song I would not have wanted to like, but I do.
Yep. Well, I'm just going to have you play a little bit of Do Me Baby. I think it's my favorite song off this record. I also wanted to foreshadow something, which I'll come back to.
Ooh, okay. Then I'm not going to make my analysis of that. Okay. I think I know where you're going.
All right.
All right. So point tally on that one. How many did you give it?
Surprisingly low for how much I like it, but I think it's because there were other albums that kind of sucked the wind away from Controversy when I was doing the final score.
Okay.
I only gave it 7.
Okay. 16.
16. That's probably where it feels better to me, kind of like 15.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a surprise here that... Okay. That I think it took its points away from Controversy. So
okay,
that's all I'll say for now. Here's an album you may have heard of, 1982's 1989. I feel like he's building off the sounds that he left off at Controversy.
Blockbuster tune. Blockbuster. This is where he, as I talked about last week, perfected his use of the Linn drum. Well, this would have been the LM1, the first version of the Linn drum machine. But throughout this record, he gets so much out of it, so many different sounds, uses it on nearly every song. I think International Lover might be the only one. I'm strictly going off of memory here, but he is building a sound that no one else has done before. The blend of synths, guitars, and his use of the drum machine in ways no one else did. This sounds like nothing else you ever heard at that time.
Yep. I think this is the magnum opus of the Minneapolis sound that we talked about.
Agreed.
Last week. This is it. It's got everything. I think, by the way, the introduction of that Linn drum wood knock was on Controversy, right? It keeps going and on and on and on and on and on. You hear it in this song,
the wood knock. that's a better description than the rim click.
Yeah, it's also like synthetic wood knock.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so that was 1999, obviously. Everyone knows that. But track listing, Little Red Corvette, Delirious, Let's Pretend We're Married, DMSR, Automatic, Something in the Water, maybe is probably kind of a deep cut.
Yeah, Free is so good.
Free is my favorite buried treasure in his entire catalog.
I think that's the best ballad he ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lady Cab Driver.
Yep.
All the Critics Love You, New York. And
again, that's similar to Annie Christian, where it seems like it's a throwaway.
Yes.
Until you get into it and you listen, you're like, wow, this is way more interesting than I gave it credit for.
I mean, this is a masterpiece of an album. I don't have any Wikipedia notes in front of me, but it had to sell multi-platinum. You know, it was just this album ended up becoming everywhere. Now, kids my age are all listening to Prince now at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Even the rockers, the pop rock lovers, the dance beat, everyone's listening to this album.
Yeah, and the if you remember the obviously knee deep in the MTV era too, the videos were a great watch too, because you got a sense of what a live performance of Prince might look like. Granted, I know that they're just lip syncing, but boy, he could lip sync to himself really well.
Yeah,
it was pretty legit looking. But those are some good videos.
I still love his dance routine during the guitar solo in Little Red Corvette.
Yeah,
he does all his James Brown moves.
Exactly.
He's so slick.
He's got the heels on.
Yeah. I didn't know at that point that he was only like 5'4".
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
He still is.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no. I mean,
depends on which way you're measuring.
Yeah.
No. Sure. But yeah, so, God, what a masterpiece. I don't know what.
Two record set, short for two record set, but obviously way too long for a single record. Magnum opus is the right descriptor for this record. Yeah.
Now, this, we start to introduce at least, I mean, obviously we have some Wendy and some Lisa. We got some female vocalists on here.
Yeah, because it's called Prince and the Revolution at this point. So we have Dez and the Wendy and Lisa and Brown Mark as the bass player.
Doc on keyboards, potentially. I doubt he played anything.
Yeah. And drummer, I can't remember his name right now. I should.
But how much of those, some of those people are credited now. And they weren't credited. On the record, it just said all songs performed, recorded, and produced by Prince.
Yeah, and I think that there's some backup vocals, like you say, from Wendy and Lisa. They're credited. But also, they do say that the guitar solo in Little Red Corvette was Dez. And you could tell it does not sound like a Prince guitar solo.
No, it doesn't. Yep. So, here's what I want to hear. I'm taking the pin out of Do Me Baby.
All right.
I think the Sonic Kissing Sister, or Kissing Cousin to that, was the last track on this album, International Lover.
Yeah.
Was that what your note analysis was going to be?
Nope. Nope. I thought you were going to say on Do Me Baby that it's a ballad, but yet he implores pop bass at times.
Oh, yeah.
Which is something you don't hear very often. So, but that song in particular, it can come off campy because of the way that the lyrics are structured. But if you kind of get past that, it's actually well structured and the performances are A+.
Yeah. Well, I did it last week. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to borrow from my lightning round. So hit the lightning.
All right.
Told you, lightning hits early and often here in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. My final thought was going to be, and I'll just do it now, is for Prince in this heyday, you had to buy the entire album. And usually you did.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason you had to was because they were just chock full with quote-unquote hits that never made it to radio.
Right.
International Lovers, they're not going to play the song where they're miming sexual acts or
right.
Lady Cab Driver, right?
Right.
So if you're not buying the album, you're missing out on like these gems.
Yes.
And I just want to play, I'll let you choose the slice, but the sonics of this recording and this song, I don't think there is any Lindrum on here. There's definitely real drums. Listen to how the piano is with the synth, just everything that sounds beautiful about the song. So let's just let it rip. Darling, I know it's been a long time since you've been satisfied. I can tell by the look at your eyes. I just love the way that song's recorded. It's just a gem.
Yeah.
All right, that's my final thought. Go out and buy all of these Prince albums and listen to all. Well, you don't even have to buy them these days. You just stream them.
But you should.
You should, yes.
Yes.
All right.
So, point values on this one. Turn to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Yep. I gave it 20.
I gave it 20 as well.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yes.
And then we never heard from Prince after this.
if it was seemed impossible to outdo your magnum opus,
all right, so we're talking.
At least in terms of popularity, he did.
Well, let's discuss whether he did artistically.
Okay.
So, anyways, this one opens with Let's Go Crazy, of course. Don't lie. Where's your living here? Take a look around. At least you got friends. I call my own lady. All right, so this is 2 years after 1999, so 1984, taking the time to make the movie and record the music.
Yeah.
Interesting, if you don't know, we may have talked about how a lot of the recordings that made the album were in part recorded live during the filming, or vice versa.
Right.
So it's an interesting album from that standpoint. I'll just say, without giving away point totals, I think he tops 1999 in this album.
Mm. When you factor in that he was making a movie too, the overall scope of that project in summation is certainly bigger. That's for sure. Does he stretches further? There's greater range in this record. When you go from a song like I Would Die For You that sounds like it could have been on 1999, but then you got something as strange as Darling Nikki sonically.
Mm-hmm. Well, Darling Nikki sounded strange to me when I first heard it.
Yeah.
And they use it in the movie to sound strange on purpose.
Yes.
Because the character, what
plays the role? The kid?
The kid is going through this, like, doesn't know who he is.
Yeah.
He's just trying to, for shock value.
Right.
But then as that song just kind of sinks into you, separate from the movie, it's a great song. I just want to go through this track list. Tell me where the low moment is here. Let's Go Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Take Me With You.
Yeah.
The Beautiful Ones. Oh,
well, that's so the low moment, because he figured out a way to tune the Lindrum down even lower than ever before.
And, well, listen to the opening, because that's what he does. All right, so
yes.
Then you got Computer Blue, which has this interesting jazz.
Yeah.
Well, first a great guitar solo, then this jazz intro or interlude. Darling Nikki, which we talked about. When Doves Cry. By the way, that's like the seventh, eighth track on the
You like
album.
That song?
I've never heard of it.
No, do you like it?
When Doves Cry?
Yeah.
I love it.
There's no bass in it. How can you?
Well, this
no
is...
No bass.
He ended up doing that a lot, and by God, he ended up doing it well.
Yeah, he did it again very significantly.
Kiss?
That's right.
Yep.
Exactly. Okay, go ahead. Well,
and there's others, but anyways. Baby, I'm a Star, and then Purple Rain, which is the magnum opus, doesn't even belong, or isn't even from the magnum opus album.
Oh, man.
Where's the low point?
There is no, absolutely. There is no low point. Not whatsoever.
And like you said, he stretched, but for me, he didn't stretch anywhere that didn't end up being brilliant.
I fully agree.
So this is, to me, this is the high point. So
this is the high point for him. This okay.
For me.
Okay. Yeah. How many points did you give it?
I would have given it 50 if it wouldn't have screwed up my score.
Yeah.
But I gave it 25.
Woohoo!
Yep. How about you?
18.
Less than 1999?
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting. But
I guess the reason is when 1999 came out, he was breaking ground. This was built off of that. So he's using some of what he built up from 1999 to create Purple Rain. That doesn't mean I think it's a shortcut or anything like that, but I'm giving more credit to 1999 because it was the creative blossom, so to speak.
Yeah, so more groundbreaking.
Yeah.
But I just think
I can't argue with that when you talk it through the way you said.
Okay. So then how do you follow up these two albums? It's almost impossible.
It is impossible.
And then in 1985, he came out with an album called Around the World in a Day.
Highly successful in its own right, but like to compare it to those last two, it's impossible. And he is getting much more of the experimental side. The Darling Nikki side is starting to show up a lot more in this record.
Interesting. One of the things, you know, he obviously went through so many different identity crises or who knows what. But this was the album that he was going to be clean and wholesome on. I don't think there's a cuss word. I don't think there's a reference to sex.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references to God.
Yeah.
Just so put in context, this is the album that has Paisley Park on it.
Yeah.
Raspberry Beret.
Pop Life.
Pop Life is the hits. And then some other ones that I really liked, that Around the World in a Day, which was the name of the
song. Condition of the Heart and The Ladder are brilliant, brilliant songs. But Temptation is a god-awful piece of work. And that brings it down for me.
Me too. America is an interesting, like... That's a, I think, a stretch, and it works at times.
My tambourine on this one?
Yep, tambourine, yep. So, overall, I mean, if this was the first of the three, I'd be like, oh my God, this album was so good.
Yeah, especially even the song Around the World in a Day with the sort of Middle Eastern stuff in there, and we start to hear the use of the finger cymbals, which he overdid.
Well, that
over time.
That becomes his new wood knock.
Yeah, it
that
does.
Is now the signature for every album, we got to hear the finger cymbals.
Finger cymbals, yes.
This was the sleeper back then and to this day.
Like, agreed.
I love this album way more than most people did. I think this was probably the very beginning of maybe where Prince is going to commercially just come off this huge high he was on. For me, I just love this album. I gave it a full 15 points.
Okay. You're not that far off from me. I gave it 12. So
okay.
Despite Temptation, maybe I would have given it more.
And I think this is the album that stole all my Dirty Mind points. They had to come from somewhere.
Right.
And Dirty Mind just, you know, I don't re-listen, just wasn't.
Yeah, that's what sort of makes this way of doing it kind of interesting.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So now.
Love that album.
He's going to make another movie.
Should he have?
Yes. Well, 1986 brings about the Parade album.
Which was from the motion picture.
Under the Cherry Moon.
Yep.
Did you see it?
To this day, I still haven't seen it.
I've had it on my TV 4 or 5 times, and I've never been able to last more than 2 minutes.
Same here.
It's so bad.
I can't get through it.
Yeah.
So, this opens with Christopher Tracy's Parade.
Somebody got a hold of a reverb unit and didn't quite understand how it works.
We're obviously hoeing new ground here.
Wow.
Yep, that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's not without its moments. Here's a song that I love. I mean, I love the groove of this tune. Mountains. Replete with the finger cymbal.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if that was an outtake from either 1999 or Purple Rain. It could have belonged in either of those records.
Yeah.
It definitely comes from that sort of mindset. Another one that's great on there that I think is Another Lover Hole in Your Head.
That is a great tune. Great tune. And yep. Also, it's in his convention that I'm not going to capitalize any of the letters.
Yeah.
I'm going to run them all together. Also, like, I'm going to just use you for the word you and
yeah.
For. Anyways. You know what's my sleeper off here?
Hmm.
Girls and Boys. Girls and Boys. Finger cymbals once again. And oh, I didn't God. Do it just for that, but that one's kind of got a nice groove to it.
And this probably has one of his, if not his most recognizable song for an audience maybe that didn't grow up on Prince the way we did. Do you think his most recognizable song might be Kiss?
I think it's his most spun.
Is it?
Don't have to be beautiful.
No, but it's the reason I thought that is because it's number one on Spotify. But Purple Rain has spun 456 million times. Kiss only has 405 million.
Oh, that.
But yeah, I think it's up there. Had it not been for Purple Rain, I think it's the most recognizable.
Honestly, that song did zero for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I liked the guitar groove. I didn't like the bass part.
I thought it was just too empty. And granted, now the bar he had set. This is all based on the bar he had set previously. I heard that like, okay, whatever. You know.
Again, no bass. Trying to go back to that When Doves Cry bell.
Yeah. So my scoring for this album, I gave 2 points for the song Mountains. I gave 2 points for Another Lover Hole in Your Head. And I gave -2 for the rest of the album. 0 for Kiss. As I said, it did nothing for me.
Mm.
For a grand total of 2 points for Parade.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this was the other surprise on my scoring sheet. Because if you would have asked me just off the top of your head, did you like the album? I'd say, not really. But from the strength of Mountains, I do like Kiss, Another Lover, Hole in Your Head, whatever that run on is. I gave this 9 points.
Holy moly, you're going to regret that down the road.
Why would I regret it?
I don't know.
Coming back to haunt me in some way?
Yeah.
All right. So you gave it what? 2?
2.
Oh, geez, that's too low. All right. Now, here's an album. If you would have asked me, I'm like, I think I do like Sign of the Times. Let's hear how this one starts out.
Remember the first time I heard that sound, I thought, uh-oh, now what is he doing?
Me too.
Yeah.
But then that song totally grew on me.
Did it ever grow on you? Yeah, it did. In and there's several on here that did. Kiss did not.
Yeah. But this did, though, in a way. Yes. Oh, yeah, so good.
For me, this album is disjointed. Its high points are very good, but it sounds like, and maybe it's what he did, it sounds like he took a bunch of ideas and things that hadn't been finished before, finished off a few new things, threw them all on a record, and said, here, Warner Brothers, here's my next album. It has very good moments, but some really poor stuff.
Yeah, and I think this is like, this marks the change where that's kind of going to be the rest of his career for me.
Yeah, kind of.
And I feel like this is another case where you got two discs here, and you only needed one.
Definitely only needed one.
One album would have been pretty good. The two is, in their entirety, is not great. You know what the best song from this album is not even on this album?
What's that?
The live version of Housequake.
Oh, is there a live version of Housequake? Well, of course there is.
Check it out. In your fucking town. Housequake. And the kick drum is the ball. Yeah, so I got introduced to that song when Prince died, and the Sirius XM devoted a whole channel to them. They were going to do it for a weekend, and it ended up lasting weeks or months, but that was in the heavy rotation. That's a jam.
Yeah.
It goes back to what you said earlier, though, is that at a certain point, his career is going to be like, let's start writing for a live band performance type of thing, and that's certainly a song.
One of the songs I really did like off this album, though it was a bit of a departure for him, was The Cross. It always sounded like a U2 song to me, like he was trying to do that.
Me too. Yeah. And I always thought that hey, this could be a U2 song.
But it's near the end of the album, and prior to that, if you're listening to the album in order, there's a few duds in a row, and I never quite make it all the way sometimes.
Well, right before it is I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man.
That's a good one.
Yep. So that was a hit, sort of.
Yep.
And then The Cross. Yep, you're right.
What's before?
A Strange Relationship.
Yeah, that's okay.
If I Was Your Girlfriend.
Again, kind of odd.
You Got the Look. That was another release.
It was, but that was a...
See, that's why, because just overly all those releases, simplified. Like You Got the Look and I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man, which is a song I loved. Like, yeah, I liked the album. But then when I went and re-listened to it, I only gave it 5 points.
I mean, we don't need It. We didn't need Housequake. We didn't need necessarily The Hot Thing. Forever in My Life's kind of weak. Then you got the live version of It's at the end of, was that It's Going to Be a Beautiful Night. It's kind of like, you just feel like stuff is thrown in there. So how many points do you give this one?
Yep. I gave it 5.
Okay, I gave it 6.
Okay.
Okay.
And then, the next album is what?
This is 1988, and the album is called Love Sexy. It loses points for the art on the cover.
Oh, does it ever?
Yes, and this
they
was...
They owe us points after this.
This was Prince sort of giving the middle finger to the whole CD industry, too.
How so?
Well, because when he released it on CD, he didn't like the idea that people could quick skip tunes now.
Oh, so they released it as all one song?
He released it as all one piano at first, so you couldn't skip over parts.
That's right. Well, it starts with this tune here, I Know. I remember I had...
sound.
Yep. I remember that. Now that you say that, because the second song on here is a banger that is one of my favorite Prince songs, Alphabet Street. And I always wanted to get past that first song to get to
Alphabet like
Street.
I Know.
I do like I Know.
I think the first half of this album is stellar, and then it goes the way of Sign of the Times. It's like a bunch of throw-together stuff on the latter half.
Agreed. I like Anastasia. That's on the first four songs.
Yes. Yep. Sheila E. on drums on that one.
Yep. There's really no other releases, though, that I remember other than Alphabet Street.
No,
this.
That was it. So you could tell that even radio was starting to find his albums a little less accessible. Maybe it's the right word.
And maybe that's kind of what the shtick was about. Like, all right, you're not going to be able to isolate any one track because I'm sort of hiding them all into one melange.
Yes.
So Alphabet Street gets a full 4 points for me, and then the rest of the album gets...
So total four for the album?
Total four.
I have 8 for the album. I give this one a little higher. And I'm not sure exactly why. Maybe because that first half of it is so strong.
It
for
is
me.
Really strong yeah. in a second listen. I actually revised it up, believe it or not, ended at 4. Yeah. I had it further down. I'm like, God, it's actually...
Is it like the unemployment numbers? You revise it up after
unexpected.
The fact.
Unexpected. Yeah. Yes. All right, so I'm sorry, you had how many for that?
8.
And I had 4. Okay, I'm going to tally the totals at the end.
Yeah, we got one more to do, and this is 1989. Prince is commissioned with doing songs for the soundtrack to the first proper reboot of Batman.
What did you think of this album?
Well, I wondered how I should score it, because I think writing songs for the movie is more difficult.
Yep.
Now, granted, when he did Purple Rain, he wrote the movie and was writing the songs to fit, and it was all him. Now, this is someone else's movie. I need you to write songs for this, and it restricts you down. So it's a little more of a difficult challenge. I find this album to be less creative overall, but as a listen, it's enjoyable. And I think it's, as we pointed out at the beginning, it's kind of the last of this style of Prince that we're going to hear.
Yeah.
So I think I'd probably grade it higher than it deserves for those reasons.
Okay. It's interesting. I was surprised that you even included this in the canon of the, but it made sense. It was the last album in 89. So I remember at the time really liking it, in part because I loved Prince, but I also loved the idea that Batman was getting resurrected.
Yeah.
And I thought that at the time, I don't think I think this now, but at the time I thought it was very well done.
It felt like a good fit at the time when they announced that Prince doing music for the Batman and Michael Keaton, and it all seemed like, oh, this is going to be great.
Jack Nicholson was going to be the bad guy.
And a lot of it was great. It didn't always stand the test of time, but at the time, it was really a big idea.
My recollection is that Prince's entire identity got wrapped up in this Batman symbol at the time. Do you remember it that way? Like, everything he did was Batman.
No, I don't remember that. I'm not saying it's not true, but that doesn't come to mind for me.
I remember. God, I'd have to go back in memory. If in the comments on Facebook, if this you remember anything like that, let us know. But I was surprised at how much I enjoyed the record when I looked at the track listing. And I'm like, I don't remember.
There's not a ton of standout hits, really. I mean, they played Bad Dance on the radio, and there's a video. Nice duet with Sheena Easton on here.
What's that?
The Arms of Orion.
Oh, yeah. That's a good song.
Yeah.
Vicky Waiting, I thought, was good at times.
Trust is fun. Party, man. You know, they're fun songs, and they fit the movie. So, again, going back to that, you got to give some... He didn't have freedom to do just whatever he wanted. And maybe that was good.
You know true. You know what sounds like a standalone Prince song to me, though?
Hmm.
Scandalous.
Oh, yeah.
Scandalous. I'm talking about you and me. Marvelous. Baby, baby, can't you see?
But, he's taking the Lindrum and tuned it all the way up.
Hey, that thing's got a lot of range.
Yeah.
My favorite moment from this entire album comes with about 3 minutes left in the entire album, and it's the change of tempo in the Bat Dance when Jack Nicholson himself says, "Stop the presses."
Vicky Vale.
Who's that? Let's hear that.
Stop the press. Stop the press. Who is that?
Vicky Vale. Vicky Vale. I like Batman.
That's a groove there.
That's cool how they did that. Yeah.
Oh, such a groove.
Very cool.
All right, you ready to rate it?
3 points.
I gave it 1.
Okay.
So we're going to tally the numbers, and we are going to crown a champion. Yeah,
run them down, top to bottom, and give us a total point. So this would be based on a 200-point aggregate.
Correct. Right. I hope it adds up.
Yeah.
Okay, so Prince, the first album, I gave 10, you gave 9, so it's got 19.
Yep.
Dirty Mind, I gave it 4, you gave it 6, it's got 10. Controversy has my 7 and your 16 to add up to 23.
Mm-hmm.
1999, we each gave it 20, so that gives it 40.
Yep.
I gave Purple Rain 25, you gave it 18, so I think Purple Rain is going to have its Purple Rain.
Yes.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Around the World in a Day got surprisingly high scores from both of us. 15 from me, 12 from you, 27. The Parade only got my 9 and your 2 for a total of 11.
Yep.
Sign of the Times, equal score, sort of. 5 for me, 6 for you.
Okay.
For 11. Love Sexy, I gave it 4. You gave it 8. And Batman, I gave it 1. You gave it 3. So a total of 4.
Is that the lowest one, Batman?
The lowest is Batman. So now we'll rank them. Yeah. So okay. Obviously we got Purple Rain number 1, 1999 number 2, Around the World in a Day number 3.
More than Controversy?
Yes.
Okay.
27 to Controversy's 23.
All right.
After that, we've got that first Prince album, well, the second Prince album,
yeah.
Prince, 19. And after that, Love Sexy.
No kidding.
At 12.
Ooh.
Got a couple of ties at Parade and Sign of the Times at 11. Dirty Minds only got 10. Does that surprise you?
Almost, yeah, it probably does in retrospect, but.
Mm-hmm. And then Batman's bringing up the rear.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's our personal assessments of what we also think are the most talented musical artists that I know of.
So, do we have time for a lightning round?
Yes, we do.
All right.
So here's something I found at sea. So I educated myself. I went my entire life thinking that Prince wrote the song "What If God Was One of Us."
Oh, yeah, it sounds like
Joan Osborne, yeah. Right? And I did some internet research. I recently got educated, but I did some internet. Apparently, a lot of people thought that. So there must have been something that somebody said, like a VJ on MTV or something,
yeah,
that got that wrong. Do you know who did write it?
Nope.
Eric Bazillion of the Hooters.
Whoa, okay. Yep,
that's who wrote that. So, interestingly enough, so I thought that's what I found at sea. But if you're looking to find other things at sea, if you want to hear Prince's version of that, so he does end up covering.
Yes.
And it was on his Originals album where he's giving you the original version. I don't know why that song's on there if he didn't write it. So there's more to uncover there.
More to uncover, yeah. More sleuthing to do.
But that's a cool album, the Originals. It's his versions of the songs that later became hits.
Right. All right, well, I have something I found at sea, sort of because just preparing for this episode as well as our Minneapolis episode from last week, I had a lot of that stuff sort of on rotation. And this was something that was sort of in the back of my head for a while, a song from a later album that I knew we weren't going to cover today. But when you hit upon the list of all the things that makes Prince great, and you mentioned his vocal range and ability, he's known for the falsetto, he's known for the screaming, he's known for having a power voice. He displays all of it in one phrase where he works all the way from the bottom of his register, up through the middle, up into the upper range, into the falsetto range, and then all the way up into his scream range, all in one flow. And that is near the end of a song from much later, but it was a hit. Remember The Most Beautiful Girl in the World?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's listen to that.
It's plain to see.
It's plain to see.
You're the reason that God made a girl.
What the what?
Whoa. The only thing missing is one of his trademarked awas or
I know.
Or who or whatever. Oh my God. He gets all the way down here.
All right, Buried Treasure then. Right. Same album.
Ooh.
Told you this was a great album.
It was a good album. And that's a good song, by the way. That's a songwriter's song. That's what we heard.
The opus on this album is a song called Gold. And this could have been the companion piece to, say, Purple Rain. And at the end, the guitar solo that he blazes, again, out of this world. Oh my gosh.
It's tracks like this you will hear on my Lost Prince playlist.
All right. So
I didn't know that existed until a couple years ago. I decided to go through a deep run of all of his stuff. I knew the Gold Experience album, but I don't remember that tune.
Yeah.
That is a gem. All right. So is that me for Buried Treasure?
I guess so.
Okay. Buried Treasure. So I was holding this from last week's episode. I'm glad you didn't bring it up. But we talked about how Prince was so prolific. He was working with all these other people, propping up other projects. This is a Paisley Park artist known as The Family.
Oh, yeah. I specifically left The Family alone because I knew you had a hot spot for him.
I just want to bring people's attention to the best version of Nothing Compares to You. When Sinead O'Connor took it to number one or whatever, I hated that version because I had heard this version originally written by Prince. You'll hear probably Prince's voice in here. And this is The Family's Nothing Compares to You.
It's been so lonely without you here. Like a bed. Without a song, oh, 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 oh. Nothing can stop these lonely tears from falling. Tell me, baby.
That's how that song was supposed to have been recorded.
Yeah, I didn't mind Sinead's version, but you're right.
I didn't like what she did with the melody line of the to you.
Yeah,
I didn't like that.
Anyways. And it's a very empty sound, but that. Prince was doing a lot of that. We talked about Kiss not having bass and When Doves Cry also. So
yeah, exactly.
That kind of became a little bit of a thing for him. So
okay. I have come up with another final thought, but unless yours really is a good punctuation.
Well, my final thought was a question real quick, and you kind of alluded to it at the beginning. I had asked the question, is there a better 10-album run in a 10-year span?
Mm.
And I know, like we said early on, people are going to say the Beatles. And maybe the Beatles... is true. They had 12 studio albums between 1963 and 1970, if you don't include Yellow Submarine. But can you imagine a better 10-year run? Even the ones that we knocked a little bit, that we didn't like as well. I can't imagine a 10-year, 10-album... No, then factor in he did the Time stuff, too, as we talked
about. Right, all that other stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
And then all the songs he wrote for other artists.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. I don't know. I would be more open to that argument that I would that there's a better artist out there, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. No.
Oh, I didn't expect that.
No. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
No.
Except my final thought,
yep.
Which is I'm going back to the around the... I'm going to take us out of Minneapolis and try to get us back into the harbors of Marina Del Rey. On the song The Ladder from Around the World in a Day, which we touched on.
Yeah.
Saxophonist Eddie M.
Mm-hmm.
Does it sound like he might be channeling David Sanborn on this solo?
Is it possible that Eddie M is a pseudonym?
Well, again, I went Wikipedia diving, and I found that there is an Eddie M. It's like Eddie Mini-Me or something like that. So
he also had Eric Leeds play a lot of sax with him, too, and they have similar tones. And again, they do all sound like they've learned something from listening to David Sanborn.
Haven't we all?
I hope so.
Well, that brings us out of the land of a thousand lakes back into southern L.A., for which we can now say...
Finally, ahoy polloi!
You don't say it that way. I give you something.